from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When the great territories of the American West won statehood, great stretches of the states went to the federal government. Huge tracts that are now national parks and forests and conservation land and more. Some Westerners have long bridled at that. Now there's a multi-state push on, again, to transfer federal lands to the states. Supporters say states can do a better job of oversight. Opponents say it's all about opening the door to development. This hour on Point, a battle in the West over who should have title to America's public lands. In a way, Cliven Bundy was a face of this movement, not the formal legislative movement, but the man out on the land refusing to pay the price per head for grazing cattle there that the Bureau of Land Management requires. It was quite a standoff. Bundy found plenty of supporters and media attention, folks on horseback, folks with guns. Here he was in an interview with Fox News last April saying, federal officials, back off.
Get your army away from my ranch and off Clark County public land and keep it out. And if they come, we'll deal with them tonight. If that's what we got to do, we'll just deal with you.
It was tense. They backed down on the ground. They're back in the courts. But legislatures are moving on this front too. Ken Ivory is a member of the Utah House of Representatives, president of the American Lands Council. They advocate for the transfer of public lands, federal land, to the states. Here's a video from the group.
This is about a failed federal lands policy that is killing Western communities, draining money right out of our kids' education, closing off recreation and grazing access, burning up Western forests, and locking up trillions of dollars in abundant natural resources in Western communities.
We're going to dive into this debate this hour. Joining me now from Salt Lake City, Utah, is Jennifer Napier Pierce, reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Jennifer, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the invitation.
We're looking here at, what, something like seven Western states that in the last year and change have either passed or introduced or explored legislation that would ask the federal government, demand in some cases, Utah's, that the federal government turn over millions of acres. We're looking at Utah, Arizona, Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, Idaho. Jennifer, tell us about what's going on in Utah. It may be the furthest down this road. What's the law that was passed? What does it, demand?
It does demand that the federal government hand over titles to BLM land, Forest Service land. We're not talking national parks. We're not talking national monuments. But they want this other federal land that's being managed in the state handed over by December 31st of this year. Now, this measure had broad support. It was passed overwhelmingly in 2012, signed by our governor, Gary Herbert. And really, I think a lot of people in the legislature perceive this to be a states' rights issue. They've seen mismanagement up front. Nearly 67% of the land in Utah is managed by the federal government, and the locals want more of a say.
67%. If this law was acknowledged and acceded to by the federal government, what portion of that huge chunk of Utah that the federal government now oversees would go to state control, Jennifer?
Well, like I said, I mean, it's huge swaths of land. We're talking a lot of BLM land, a lot of Forest Service land, and there's land that is just outside of the National Park Service that is already managed by the federal government. So we're talking, hundreds of thousands of acres.
And it would or would not include the famous national parks and monuments, Arches and Zion and Canyon lands?
It would not.
Okay. They say hand it over. They've passed the law. What's their standing? Is there any sign that the federal government's going to say, sure, fine, here's your land?
No indication of that yet. And there's even some uncertainty at the state level of exactly what's going to happen on January 1st. We've heard from the Attorney General's office that a lawsuit will not be filed, after the deadline on December 31st. There is a commission that has been studying this issue. A report is expected mid-November. But the Attorney General's office really is laying low on this one. They've been embroiled in same-sex marriage. That's been sort of their primary legal battle. And they're laying low on this one. They won't say exactly what their course of action will be. They are waiting for that commission study to come forth next month.
So in Utah's case, do you see this as a real push, or is this just a political statement, a kind of a conservative statement about states' rights, I guess?
I There's a split, and you mentioned the schism between this rural image of Clive and Bundy and then the more citified lawmakers who are pushing for legislative change. I would say that that battle, there is a rural and an urban schism mentality, too, here in Utah. I mean, along the Wasatch Front, a lot of people are very resistant, but as you get further out in rural counties, and county commissioners especially are very, very worked up about this issue, and it's they are enlisting congressional representative support. So there's definitely a political element to this. It has become a campaign issue as we've had statewide debates, particularly with our congressional candidates. But, I would say that the push is really coming from the rural parts of the state.
And is it about states' rights, that political perspective, or is it about getting at oil and gas and timber and mining resources?
Well, I think it's a local control issue. People see these lands in the backyard, and you know, there's fire management complaints that they have. They do not have a harmonious relationship with BLM, and so yes, there's very much, you know, we need more of a seat at the table. We have a congressional representative, Rob Bishop, who's been working for years trying to broker a compromise on what land should be developed and what should be preserved. But this really is about local control, as I see it.
Jennifer, the management of these lands, these huge tracts, is extremely expensive. From what I'm reading here, no one thinks the states can afford it. How would Utah handle the cost of that? Would it require Utah, in effect, to lease or sell or whatever they might, the rights to this land to developers so that they could afford to manage it?
That's a point of contention. I think people are still trying to work that out, and we will see what this commission that the legislature has set up. They are looking at the financial end of this because there is a very practical part that needs to be worked out before any takeover could be possible. But yes, I mean, the financial part of it is a huge element that needs to be confronted. I don't think that the leaders haven't quite worked that out yet.
What do you say to those who say this is just a kind of front for industrial and resource companies that want to get in there? The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, has put out model legislation that states have looked at. Maybe Utah used it. I don't know. They've got money from the Koch brothers, who are big into fossil fuels. Is there a concern that this is a kind of, you know, working the system to open the doors to people who just want to get at the gas?
Absolutely. And the environmental community locally is very concerned about having an open door to, you know, if there's a money problem, are they going to be selling off this land, parceling it off? There's a lot of oil-rich reserves in this state, natural gas, huge oil and gas industry going right now, and conservationists are legitimately concerned.
Jennifer Napier-Pierce with the Salt Lake Tribune. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Jennifer Napier-Pierce in Salt Lake City. In a moment, we'll hear from U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico. But first, joining me from Helena, Montana, is Jennifer Fielder, Montana State Senator since 2012, Chairman of Montana's Legislative Study on Federal Land Management, a Republican. Jennifer Fielder, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been pushing hard for more state control over these lands. Why, Senator Fielder?
Well, I can tell you that in Montana, the state legislature in 2013 made this statement that management of U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands in Montana has a significant and direct bearing on Montana's environment, education funding, economy, culture, wildlife, and the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. And the legislature also affirmed in this resolution that was passed, by the way, by 83% of the Montana legislature, which was is a very bipartisan legislature. This legislature affirmed that federal funding and capacity for federal land management and for responsible management of these public lands is in serious jeopardy, while critical threats such as beetle kills, invasive species, watershed degradation, access restrictions, and catastrophic fires continue to escalate. So we've got real problems on the landscape here, and I appreciate the chance to tell more people about these problems that we're suffering because of very poor stewardship of millions of acres of public lands. We basically have a 5-million-acre ticking time bomb in Montana because of the poor health and the hazardous conditions that have been created from mismanagement of our national forest.
Senator Fielder, if the federal government can't afford to manage this well, how can Montana? And if you did take over those millions of acres, would it mean selling off development rights in order to deal with handling the land?
Well, I think what we could do at the state level is inject a large dose of common sense to the management model. In Montana, we manage 5 million acres of public lands already, and we do so while protecting the environment and providing multiple-use public access and also generating revenues. We are under a constitutional mandate in Montana to manage our state trust lands to generate revenues that support our school system, our university system, our veterans' homes, and our school for the deaf and blind, as well as our state capitol campus. So we know how to manage public lands responsibly. In fact, I think all of the western states have a very good track record of managing the public lands that they manage and that they own.
Senator Fielder, stand by. We have to take a short break right here. Senator Jennifer Fielder in Helena, Montana. We're talking about the big debate out west over transferring federal public lands, vast tracts, to the states. Listeners, you can join us. Is this the way we should go? Why? Why not? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big debate in the West over transferring federal public lands, vast tracts, national forests, conservation lands, open space, to the states. And critics say on into the hands of developers. Those pushing for it say we've got problems here. The federal government's not doing it right. States can do it better. Senator Mark Heinrich of New Mexico joins us in just a moment here. Jennifer Fielder is with us, state senator from Montana, with us from Helena. Senator Fielder, lots of response here, and a lot of people outside your state not so crazy about this. Charlotte says, this is on Facebook, you know, federal land is my land. It can't be sold to an individual or corporation. It belongs to all Americans. Kevin says, I don't want our land sold into private hands. See, people are going right to that. Stephanie says, multinational energy corporations and our fragile ecosystems do not mix. You destroy these last remaining open spaces for eternity for a temporary profit. Everyone's assuming here, Senator Fielder, that if it goes to the states, it will inexorably, or the rights to develop it will go on to private hands. What do you say?
Fear-mongering technique that the opponents have been using, but it's a false narrative. Because if the states sell these lands, 95% of the revenue from those sales goes directly to the national treasury. The states do not benefit. That's by law in our Statehood Enabling Acts, and it's also built into the legislation that Utah passed that the federal government would receive the funds for the sales. 5% would go to the state, but it would be held in a trust account that cannot be spent. Only the interest could be spent for schools. So there's no incentive for the states to sell these lands. Our goal is to manage them better so that we can have better public access, better health of the environment, and better economic productivity in balance with ways that are compatible with in protecting the environment.
How would you deal with the enormous costs of managing these lands? Where would that come from? I mean, I'm reading assessments here that say it would bankrupt states.
Well, I think you're reading the wrong assessments. Of course, the opposition puts out some fuzzy math. But if you look at the actual data, you can see that the average of state trust land income is $9.32 for every dollar that we spend on state trust land. This is across the western states. And the average revenue per dollar spent by the U.S. Forest Service is 23 cents. So for every dollar they spend, they're bringing in 23 cents. For every dollar the states spend, we're bringing in $9.32. That's data straight from the government reports.
Senator Jennifer Fielder of the Montana's state legislature, please stand by there in Helena. With us as well now from Washington is U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich, senator from New Mexico since 2013, Democrat, serves on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Senator Heinrich, welcome to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
You do see a movement to get this done. Do you think it's a serious movement? And you've written in opposition to it. Why?
Well, I think these public lands, our national forests, our wildlife refuges, Our national monuments are really part of the fabric of our democracy, and we should keep them that way. They do belong to the citizens of the Western states, but they also belong to all Americans. And this is an effort that I think will lead, if it's successful, to a lot of no trespassing signs. In the state of New Mexico, the state land office has at times had really great managers and at times had terrible managers. We've seen millions of acres of state lands sold off that now hunters and fishermen, outdoor recreationists can no longer access. When they go to those places today, they do see no trespassing signs. And as a Westerner, as a sportsman myself, that's very concerning.
Is this for real, or will the federal government just say no? Do you see a real serious movement that could take this out of federal management and put it into state hands, Senator Heinrich?
I think some people are very serious about this. I think it's an issue that should be taken very serious, very seriously. And I think there are some people who are more just jumping on the bandwagon more opportunistically. But I don't think it's something that we should dismiss, because we are certainly seeing a movement at the county level and at the state level to push this agenda forward.
And if it's lost, do you think it'll be lost to development? Is that why you wouldn't be able to get in there and camp and hunt and the rest?
If you look at state lands, in my home state of New Mexico, for one, you can't even camp on state land.
Why?
State land, it's just that's the way it's managed by the state land office. So there are places where I go hunting on national forest land. I harvested an elk with my son earlier this year. We had to backpack in, and we had to camp where in the backcountry where we were hunting. You can't do that on state land effectively in New Mexico. But more importantly, if you look at the underlying impact, how this would impact rural New Mexico, and I would guess other states throughout the West, the land management costs are enormous. They're, you know, we're talking about between $3 and $4 billion a year just to deal with the fire issues, particularly as climate change has a bigger and bigger driving effect on our national forest. Hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases in a single year for a single state. Those would absolutely devastate state budgets, unless, of course, you're willing to dramatically raise taxes on the residents of those areas.
Or, you have written, unless you're willing to lease large expanses to developers, including oil and gas and timber and mining companies, you point to the Grand Staircase.
Or sell those lands off, frankly. And you know, to be fair, the federal government in New Mexico does lease federal lands for oil and gas. We are one of the largest producers of oil and gas in the country. But we do it in a balanced way that has other uses at the table, too. Sportsmen, hunters, fishermen, recreationists, conservationists, and our, you know, we have an incredible history of protecting our cultural resources, our archaeology, places like Chaco Canyon. All of those uses are at the table at the same time. When you move to a state model, it really is about how many dollars you can generate back into the state permanent funds.
Senator Fielder, State Senator Fielder in Montana, why not just have the federal government do a better job? If you've got complaints, you know, take them up with the Bureau of Land Management and more and fix it rather than take on this fiscal burden for the states. What's the difference, Senator Fielder?
Well, we've tried for decades, and Congress has tried for decades to try to resolve some of these problems, and they just haven't been able to because the priorities of the Western states are not the same priorities for the rest of America. We're the ones that are impacted by these catastrophic wildfires. We're the ones that have to choke on the smoke. We're the ones that are seeing our watersheds destroyed and polluted, our wildlife burning up. So it really matters to us. It's a high priority for us. But in Montana, we only have one congressman out of 435 in Washington, D.C. to represent us. So that one congressman doesn't have a very strong voice there. At the state level, the people of Montana that live here and are impacted by these decisions and would have a direct say in how these lands are managed.
So what would you do about forest fire threats, for example, if Montana had more control over federal land within the state?
Great question. You know what we would do? We would actually reduce the fire hazard that's out there. We have found through the studies after the Colorado wildfires that you can save $17 for every dollar that you spend on pre-suppression wildfire control. You go in and you clean up the forest, you take out the dead trees, you make your forest healthy and resilient to wildfire, and you save $17 for every dollar you spend on that work. And you're also putting people to work in the process, and you're not destroying your wildlife and your environment when you reduce these catastrophic wildfire conditions. We also save up to $500 for every dollar in total damages by pre-suppression wildfire work. And what we're seeing right now with the federal agencies is they've got it backwards. They're spending 80 to 90% of their budget on fighting the fires after they ignite and fighting lawsuits because they're not able to follow their own laws. So we would be much more efficient with the way the money is used and make sure that the land is being taken care of and that we are protecting the access to it and the health of it.
Senator Martin Heinrich in Washington, out of New Mexico, what do you make of that argument? Is there federal mismanagement? Could the states do it better?
I think we can always manage our lands better, and I've been one of the leaders in Washington of shifting our investment to pre-fire prevention. I've worked with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, including Republicans like Jeff Flake, to focus more on stewardship contracting, to make sure that we're doing the prevention instead of just dealing with the fires after the fact. And in New Mexico, I've seen the National Forest have a much more aggressive forest treatment plan than what we've seen at the state level. So I think, you know, some of this is more of a desire to have more control in a fewer number of people's hands. Democracy is hard. It's hard to change laws. It's hard to change policy. But that's what democracy is all about. And these public lands that belong to all Americans, they belong to my constituents in New Mexico. But, you know, the Grand Tetons in Wyoming belong to us, too. And people in the East Coast also have a stake in those lands. These lands are part of the fabric of our democracy, and we should keep it that way.
Let's go to our listeners, if I may. Danielle in Woodward, Iowa. Danielle, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Senators, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I am a former federal park ranger. The view to sell off national lands is ecologically benighted. One of the reasons is that these biologically diverse environments provide ecological services. Without those services, we're going to tank. The arguments being made that it's very costly to do this is a very good argument, but it's more costly to repair the damage. Here in Iowa, we have cattle raisers who graze cattle on their own land, so when I hear unlocking the resources for states' agricultural program, mm-hmm. what I'm hearing is they're not paying enough for the grazing leases that they get. When I hear recreation, I'm hearing there's going to be a lot of all-terrain vehicle damage. Part of what I do as someone who does ecological restoration, both as an avocation and something that I teach on the college level,
yeah.
is that we are trying to heal those all-terrain vehicle scars.
Daniel, why do you assume that if control went to the states, there'd be more environmental damage?
Because this program to sell the lands or give the lands back to the states has to do with the resurrection of what was formerly known as the Blue Ribbon Coalition. It is an industry-funded action. And the fact that the federal government is unable to manage the lands that they have goes back to the Republican-controlled House of Representatives that are defunding the jobs of the people who do this work. It's really expensive to do prescribed fires. I know because I do them. I'm a volunteer. I'm federally certified as a wildland firefighter, too. I do it out of love, not for money, and I work with state and federal people who know how to put this practice on the land. We need more federal people who are skilled technicians in these ecological restoration services.
Danielle, we've got, and I appreciate your call from Woodward. Senator Heinrich, is that what this is? A defund or
well,
cut funding overall at the federal level and then come back in?
Which is, you know, through the sequestration, all of those management things that local communities and nationally we agree on. For example, preventing wildfires through better forest thinning prescriptions, making sure that we do ecosystem-level restoration programs that benefit grazers as well as benefit the entire ecology of the region. All of those things have been pushed to the back burner. They've been starved for resources. Law enforcement has been starved for resources. So it sort of creates an incentive to say there must be a better way. But I can tell you that in the state of New Mexico, there is very little law enforcement on state trust lands. They simply don't have the resources, even to a greater extent than the federal lands. And I've seen state trust lands actually signed no trespassing because they someone knows that they can get away with that, that there won't be a law enforcement official out there making sure that they're abiding by the public trust rules on those lands.
Hal in Midland, Texas. Hal, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I was wanting to speak about an issue that occurred in Texas. First off, on the funding and this resources and sequestration, as far as that goes, you know, I remember Tom Brokaw week after week doing a fleecing of America. And these people in Washington spend money like it's crazy. It's going on today. If you're aware of the situation, there's a lot of money being spent on wasted.
What about the federal lands, Hal? What do you see going on with federal lands in particular?
In Texas, the Red River changed course due to some heavy rains. EPA and the government tried to go in there and steal land from a private property owner. You know, that's just the attitude and the out of control federal government at work. These people spend money, they waste money like it wasn't theirs, and that's precisely correct. It's not theirs, and they're not competent. Now the ranger had a point as far as you know, in your pre-fire control is
yes.
Extremely important. That sort of thing needs to occur. And I believe the states could do it. There's an education that needs to take place, and a want to, but the money is there.
Hal, I appreciate your call from Midland. Senator Heinrich, I know I've just got you for another minute here. How do you see the politics of this? The Republican National Committee has been pushing for this push of federal lands to the states, I guess. You've got a vote in the House in Washington endorsing the sale of public lands. How does this break down politically, and do you see a real chance of this happening on a substantial level?
You know, I think as this issue gets to sort of permeate the public's consciousness, you'll see a stronger and stronger pushback on it. The efforts have been led by people like Rob Bishop, who is a congressman in the House, Jason Chaffetz of Utah, who's another member of the House of Representatives, Louie Gohmert in Texas. And I think that as people wake up to this being a real and credible threat, there will be an enormous pushback. We've already seen that in New Mexico. People are up in arms about this, and we're one of the states where our state legislature actually turned down the legislation. But I think this is an issue that the more people talk about it, the more that they know that the places that they care about, that they recreate, that they vacation, that they hunt and fish with their kids, might not be there in the future for them to access in that same way, the more of a push against these sorts of policies that we're going to see.
Push just keeps coming. Utah has set a deadline, end of December, for the federal government to give them their federal lands. Of course, I guess that will end up in the court if the attorney general there pursues that. U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich from New Mexico has been with us from Washington. Senator, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the big debate in the West over transferring federal public lands, vast tracts, national forests, conservation lands, open space, to the states. Here's just a little tape of this is Rick Green, tour guide in Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. It would go to state control under Utah's legislation. He spoke with the Salt Lake Tribune last summer about leading groups through the steep and winding rock formations there.
But really, that's where the fun starts, is when you're sliding on your butt and your back's on one wall and your feet are on the other and your partner's reaching for you. That's really where the action is, and so we kind of like that, and that ends up being a surprise. And the scenery, of course. I mean, it's just spectacular.
1997 report from the Utah Geological Survey finds that that monument, Grand Staircase Escalante, quote, includes some of the most energy-rich lands in the lower 48 states. Critics say that may be what a lot of this is about. Jennifer Fielder joins us from Helena, Montana. Matt Lee Ashley joins us right now from Washington, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, focuses on public lands and energy, environmental policy. Matt Lee Ashley, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
What do you see going on here?
Well, I think earlier in the show, the question came up, and it's the real question here, is who do these lands belong to rightly? Are our national forests, our national monuments, our national wildlife refuges, are those American lands, or should they belong to just one state? And should Western taxpayers have to pay the full cost of managing those lands? We did a public opinion poll that was conducted by a Republican pollster and a Democratic pollster, and it was 8 Western states, 1,600 voters responded, and overwhelmingly about 7 in 10 Westerners believe that these public lands are American lands and should be American public lands, and a majority, a strong majority, opposes these plans to transfer them to the states.
Those sound like carefully tailored questions in a way. You're asking, do you want to have to pay for the management? Oh, boy, and of course they're American. I mean, many states in the country, not in the West, don't have such huge tracts that are federally controlled. Why should Western states in perpetuity have, I mean, look at Nevada, 81% of Nevada, 81%, that's a lot, of Nevada's land federally controlled forever? Why?
Well, when it comes down to it, the public lands in the West are one of the region's strongest competitive advantages. When competing for jobs, when employers are going out to hire workers, people want to move to the West because of those outdoor opportunities. There was a great study from some economists that showed that job growth in the West over the last 4 decades outpaced other regions in large measure because of this competitive advantage of having open spaces, that the great landscapes that you think of when you think of the West. And so there's an economic imperative of ensuring those places remain protected and open and accessible to everybody.
Senator Fielder, you know, the consistent thread through people sending us questions and comments online is they just don't believe that these lands will stay protected from full-on development if they go into state hands. Can you offer any comfort there, or do you want these lands to be developed, Senator Fielder?
No, there's really strong agreement that the lands should remain public. The goal of transferring to local control is so that we can do a better job of providing public access, protecting environmental health, and restoring some economic productivity where it makes sense and where it's compatible. I would just say that people ought to think about Washington, D.C.'s financial situation. Washington, D.C. has put this country $18 trillion in debt. The state of Montana isn't in debt. We have to balance our budget. We have to be responsible to our citizens.
But does that mean you might keep it as public land but lease it out every which way to oil companies and gas companies and all the rest? That would be an obvious way to balance the books.
Well, there is some leasing that occurs on federal land and state land. But the idea is that it's done by people that are closer to the subject matter, that know the subject matter, and that care about it the most. Montanans care about the lands that we live on more than people in another state do.
I mean, historically, Montanans exploited a lot of those resources to the hilt and to the cost, the environmental cost of the state. And that was Montanans too, Senator Fielder.
Well, I think if you're talking about the old days before there were any environmental laws, absolutely. But now we've got excellent environmental laws in place. We have a Department of Environmental Quality. We have a State Forestry Department. We have a State Fish and Wildlife Department. State of Montana does a tremendous job at managing our lands and our wildlife and our environment. It's a very high priority for us. Our lives depend on proper management of these resources.
Matt Lee Ashley, what's the source of your skepticism or fear here exactly? I mean, you talk kind of a big theme about this staying, you know, in the ownership of all Americans, and we get that, and the economic benefits of open space and wildlife. But what's on your skeptical side or your fearful side? What are you worried about if it goes to the states?
Senator Fielder made a good point. I mean, states have to have balanced budgets. And so to make this plan work, you need to do one of 3 things. You need to either you need to sell off those lands to the highest bidder to balance the budget and to pay for the wildfire costs and all the other costs of managing the lands. You're going to have to either drill those lands or mine those lands or log those lands. or you're going to have to raise taxes on the people of that state. And when those alternatives are presented, Westerners just don't want to do that. They shouldn't. They don't believe they should have to pay the full cost of managing America's public lands.
But she points out that federal government already leases resource access on some of these lands, maybe many. What's the difference?
That's exactly right, and there's a tremendous amount of development that occurs on federal public lands right now. 50% of those revenues are going back to the state. And when you look at the numbers right now, there's a tremendous amount of oil and gas development happening. Oil production is up about 25% in recent years. I think it would be a stretch to think that states are somehow going to be able to lease more lands for oil and gas drilling. Right now, there are 7,000 permits to drill that are just sitting on the shelf. Companies aren't drilling on them. The federal government has approved. And so this notion that somehow if you the states take control, you're going to be able to squeeze out some more profits from public lands just isn't right.
So what's your fear? I still don't quite hear it. If the federal government's already leasing rights for oil and gas and more, states might have to do the same. But as you say, the federal government's already doing it. What's the difference?
Senator Heinrich touched on many of these points. One is access to public lands. Right now, everybody has a chance to get outdoors on national forests and national parks and national monuments. And state lands aren't all treated the same way. And so first, a sportsman who want to go hunt and fish won't necessarily find open gates anymore. And secondly, if you have to sell public lands, that means a privatization of large landscapes. And so it's a disappearance of outdoor opportunities. And then also, I think it goes without saying that if you're going to try to maximize profits off of public lands, either by privatizing them or increasing energy production and mining, you're going to have to allow development in some very sensitive areas. You noted that the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in Utah was, in fact, exempted from this law that would have, set aside national parks still for the federal government. The Grand Staircase Escalante would go to the state of Utah under the Utah bill, and that would open that area to a tremendous amount of coal mining. You see that north of the Grand Canyon at the Kaibab National Forest were turned over to the state. See uranium mining very near the Grand Canyon. So there are big implications here for the Western landscape.
Do you see the Koch brothers and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, pushing for that reason to get at resources?
I think if you look at who's behind this effort and who's funding it, it tells quite a clear story here. Earlier in the show, you mentioned ALEC developing model legislation. That is the legislation that's being shopped around Western state legislatures. Mm-hmm. That is funded by the Koch brothers, by ExxonMobil, by oil and gas companies. Americans for Prosperity, another Koch-funded group, was behind the push in New Mexico. You look at the lead sponsor of legislation in Wyoming. He is the CEO of a uranium company, one of the biggest funders for the American Lands Council. Is a potash mining company. So there is money behind this, there are special interests behind this, and there is an economic interest in this play.
Let me take a call from New Mexico. Alamogordo, New Mexico. Yvette is calling. Yvette Harrell, I read here, state representative in New Mexico, Republican calling from Alamogordo. Yvette Harrell, thank you for calling. What do you see going on?
Hi, Tom. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Well, what I see going on is really a lot of fear-mongering. I hear people saying things, making accusations that clearly they actually have no information or no specific or scientific or verifiable information. I will set this story straight that ALEC is not behind this legislation pushing this in the Western states. As a matter of fact, Utah passed their bill first, then took their bill to ALEC and had it passed as model legislation for other states to introduce. But ALEC is not behind this. I mean, that's a misnomer.
But there's plenty of reporting that says that they are. I don't know what you've done in New Mexico, whether you used it or not, but don't they have model legislation out here designed to establish a mechanism for the transfer of ownership of non-state lands from the federal government to the states? That's pretty clear.
Yes, they do, and that meant model legislation came from Utah. And if you look at the bigger picture, I mean, the transfer of public land certainly has a lot to do with federalism, which is something that the United States has moved away from. And I think Western legislators really recognize that we need to see the balance of power in terms of equal footed for our own states as opposed to the eastern states. And, you know, this is being supported in the East. I mean, South Carolina passed a resolution supporting the Western states. I will agree with Senator Heinrich that the federal government has done a poor job of managing our forests, but I also want to let you know that in New Mexico, we send over $500 million a year to the federal government for managing our public lands, and that is just from one industry, the gas and oil industry. So you can well imagine what New Mexico could do with that kind of revenue if we kept it within the state. And I'm not sure where the survey came from, or the caller before me had the information. He certainly hasn't spent very much time in New Mexico, because we are not full of jobs. We do not have people knocking our doors down. In fact, we've had very few people, over just 1,800 in the last year and a half, moved to New Mexico. So we're not able to capitalize on employment opportunities because of the open spaces. But at the end of the day, you know, we need to look at the bigger picture and see how can the states be more reliant on themselves than reliant on federal government. And like Senator Felder said, $18 trillion in debt. We don't want to see these lands privatized. We want to keep them. In New Mexico, 112 years of usage. We need to keep that usage the way it is. Who they need to be worried about is the federal government, who just took 500,000 acres in southern New Mexico and named it, you know, a national monument, and who's looking at another 300,000 acres north of our missile range. Those are the lands we won't be able to access, and that has nothing to do with our bill. That's federal overreach.
State Representative Yvette Harrell calling in there from Alamogordo, New Mexico, Republican state rep there. Yvette Harrell, thank you very much for calling. We're looking at the big debate in the West over the push to transfer federal public lands to state control. Senator Fielder in Montana, what about this issue of access? We heard U.S. Senator Heinrich of New Mexico raise it. Matt Lee Ashley at the Center for American Progress raises it. If this goes to state control, Americans who have had pretty good access to federal lands for all kinds of reasons, hunting and hiking and you name it, may lose some significant portion of that access, Senator Fielder.
Well, I disagree. In fact, the access restrictions that we're seeing increasingly on federal lands are the main reason I got involved in this. My constituents and I live in an area of northwest Montana that's surrounded by millions of acres of federal lands, and we're seeing them locked up. We're seeing gates go up. We're seeing tax dollars be spent to actually obliterate roads. Federal policies and plans that call for the total destruction of the access routes into the forest so that you can't even walk on them. These are in the actual forest planning documents that I started reading before I even got into politics. It's one of the reasons it stirred me into action. They were shutting down our forest.
Matt, I've got to come back to you on the issue of what is pushing this drive. Jennifer Fielder says poor management is what she sees, and costs to the state. You heard the state rep from New Mexico saying, we need room for economic development here. You know, we need to get at more of these resources. What do you see as fundamentally behind this? And is this in the end quixotic? Is it, there's no way it's going to happen because Congress just won't go along with it? Or is there a real chance that we may see big chunks of land peeled off, Matt?
I think at a broader level, there is a very conservative ideology behind this push, a very anti-federal government sentiment that is driving it. Interestingly, if you talk to folks about their views on the National Park Service, the Forest Service, even the Bureau of Land Management, these agencies themselves have very high approval ratings. So people do see this as an important function of government. But more broadly, and if you look at D.C. Here and what's happening in Congress, these efforts to sell off public lands aren't confined to the states. There are members of Congress and who are pushing to sell off public lands. It was in the Ryan budget 2 years ago. And what's more, some of these same members, Congressman Bishop from Utah among them, have effectively blocked all progress on wilderness and national parks and monuments out of the Congress. It's been since 2005 since any meaningful legislation to protect public lands has come out of the Congress. And so there's a while some of these efforts probably will not succeed in the states, we are seeing at a national level this ideology taking hold and effectively blocking the conservation of public lands that many folks want to see happen.
Senator Fielder, I'm reading here from the Denver Post, an editorial there saying, don't go down this road, leave it with the feds. And they write that this is another futile version of the sagebrush rebellion. Do you think this may actually happen, Senator Fielder, or is this a kind of philosophical talking shop where nothing really changes?
No, I think it will happen. It's just a matter of when. You know, if you look to the model of the Northwest Territories in Canada, after 10 years of negotiation, they finally successfully this year achieved full control of the public lands within the Northwest Territories. They reached an incredible agreement with the federal government where the lands and the resources and the authority for those, the regulation of those lands and resources was transferred right to the Northwest Territories government. And the federal government is actually paying the Northwest Territories to manage the lands and resources because they couldn't do it long distance. They've transferred the control and the responsibility to the people that live on the landscape because decisions tend to be better when they're made by people that are closer to the subject matter.
Why should the rest of the country trust the states to do a better job? Why should they be confident that this isn't just a way to have this end up in private development?
Well, number one, it was Washington, D.C. that shut down all the national parks and public lands when they had their budget squabble just a year ago. You know, if our state governor did that, he would be out of office in a heartbeat. There's no way the people would put up with that out here in the West. We love our public lands. We rely on access to our public lands. We want them taken care of. Congress can get away with that stuff because they're so far removed from the people here. Washington, D.C. is not doing a good job with management. They're not doing a good job with fiscal responsibility.
Jennifer Fielder, we've got it. Thank you for joining us from Helena, Montana. Matt Lee Ashley at the Center for American Progress. Look who's voting for what. There's a story told right there. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.